Hello and welcome back to That's Not How the Story Goes When I Tell It. Today I'll be doing part two of the Civil War lecture that I've been giving in class. Today we're going to go through Fort Sumter. We're going to go through some of the differences in the North and the South, and also through some of the differences in the leadership in the North and the South. Let's get started. Fort Sumter happens on April 12, 1861. Basically, South Carolina decides that they're going to take all of the stuff that's in South Carolina and make it belong to South Carolina. It makes sense. I mean, it is in their territory. It makes sense that they should have it. But at the same time, the North says, no, that's our stuff. Like, we put it there. That's our resources in the mint that we're going to use to make money. That's our troops and our bunks and stuff in the forts that you guys are taking. That's our stuff. You can't have it. And South Carolina, it's in our state. It's ours. To make matters worse, Major Robert Anderson, who's in Fort Sumter, only has enough supplies to last about 3 days-ish. It's April 12th. He has enough supplies to last until the middle of April. The problem is, Robert Anderson knows he doesn't have a lot of supplies. Lincoln has a problem. Lincoln's got to try to protect Fort Sumter, but not cause a war. He knows Fort Sumter's not strong enough to resist an attack, but he knows if he sends reinforcements, the South will think it's an attack, and they will immediately attack. So Lincoln has this idea. He's going to tell South Carolina, I'm sending the fort stuff, provisions, food, water, things like that. I'm not sending any people, just stuff. The problem is that goes on a naval ship. And when the South sees this naval ship in South Carolina, they attack. They start bombing Fort Sumter and they bomb it for 36 hours. PGT Beauregard, or Pierre Gustave Tuton Beauregard, I'd probably go by PGT as well, is the guy in the South that is doing this bombing. Interesting story, when he was at the academy, his commander was Robert Anderson, the guy that's in charge of Fort Sumter right now. The guy that actually gives the command for the first shot of the Civil War is a guy named Edmund Ruffin. He is a fire eater, he is pro-slavery, and he is very proud of it. He's very proud of the fact that he also gives this command. He's about 66 years old whenever the Civil War starts. He joins the Confederate Army, and when it's over, he has lost his wife and 8 kids during this time, during the Civil War, and he decides rather than fall back into Yankee hands, he kills himself. When Fort Sumter is done, I told in class, there's only one casualty of Fort Sumter, and it's a Confederate horse. The North decides to do a 100-cannon salute as they take their flag down after they've surrendered. About cannon 41, as they're firing off these celebratory cannons, a cannon explodes and kills a man, and that is the first death in the Civil War, is a death that happens during a celebration after the bombing of Fort Sumter. The impact of Fort Sumter is that Confederates had fired first. And if you remember from the last podcast, Lincoln said there's not going to be a fight unless the South starts it. Now he can say the South started it. He says an issue, he says that he's going to have to do something. This is an issue that he's going to have to take care of. So he asks for 75,000 volunteers, and he gets way more. This is a good problem to have. He gets so many people that he has to say, actually, we don't need you to fight for us. We don't need you to risk your life for us. Go home. Within 8 days, April 19th and April 27th, Lincoln blockades different southern ports, trying to keep them from getting supplies to hopefully have them quit, stop, avoid any kind of conflict. Then we have the problem that the South sees that Lincoln calls for reinforcements, so they say, this is war. They call it the War of Northern Aggression. We've seen the aggression that the North has given, which is trying to supply their fort and building up troops. After this, the states of Virginia, Arkansas, Tennessee, and North Carolina join the Confederacy, and the capital moves to Richmond, which is like this far from the capital of the North in Washington, D.C. There are some states that do not join the Confederacy, even though they own slaves in those states. Missouri, Kentucky, Maryland, Delaware, and eventually West Virginia. West Virginia breaks away from Virginia, and the way that they do that is by claiming that West Virginia was the state and Virginia broke away from them, and it works. Lincoln constantly tells them, this war is not about slavery. This war is about keeping the Union together. If he were to say, I want to get rid of slavery, then Missouri, Kentucky, Maryland, Delaware, and West Virginia, they're all going to say, you know what? Maybe we don't want to be a part of this. He says this is to keep the Union together. And he constantly says this. Basically, the South is like a kid that's throwing a fit. As soon as they're done, they can come back in. We'll love them. But right now, they're going to have to get their act together. There are five groups, the five civilized tribes, called by the Confederacy, that join the Confederacy. A lot of them own slaves. They have more in common with the southern states. There are some Cherokees and Plain Indians that end up siding with the Union. There are many advantages in the North: manufacturing ability, transportation, that's railroads, canals, roads, etc. The economy, the wealth, they have a superior navy. They have more people, more manpower, more immigrants, more manpower. The disadvantages is they have to invade, they have to conquer the South and force it back into the Union. And Northerners, they're not really ready for a fight. They haven't been doing this all of their lives, at least not most of them. They also have fewer qualified military leaders. On the South, the advantages are they can fight a defensive war. They don't have to invade, they just have to sit there and defend. They also don't have to win the war, they just have to not lose. The morale, at least in the beginning, is way up on the southern side. They have the most talented military officers. Their soldiers are basically like the ones that have been fighting. They've been using guns since they were little, and they have their rebel yell. They don't have places to make stuff, especially weapons. They don't really have a lot of transportation, and their economy is dependent on cotton. Cotton is very valuable if you can make something out of it, but they don't really have the way to do that. The population is about 70-30 in favor of the North. How much money people have is about 80-20. Factories are about 85-15. Cotton, by far and away, the South has the edge on cotton, 99.9-ish%. I mean, a lot. Food, you're talking 70-30 in favor of the North. Horses, 70-30 in favor of the North. And then in order to transport stuff, the North is using railroads while the South is using donkeys. We've got some problems. The other thing that I really pointed out in class is guns. There's about 32 guns in the North for every one gun in the South. There's also as many factories in the North as there are workers in the South. That's a little bit crazy. The political leadership, on the North, you have Abraham Lincoln and his vice president, Hannibal Hamlin. Hannibal Hamlin's going to be the VP for the first four-year term that Lincoln serves. After that, it's going to switch over to Andrew Johnson, and I'll get into that a little bit later. Lincoln has the advantage of being the leader of a country that has existed. People know, like other countries know, this is the United States. It's existed for a while. We can probably count on it to like pay debts and things like that. He can lead public opinion, and he's nice to the South. That's a good thing. It pays to be nice. He does do some things that he's not supposed to do. Like, he increases the size of the army when Congress is only one, the only one that's allowed to do that. They say, hey, you can't do that, but okay, we'll do that. He also suspends the writ of habeas corpus, the right to a person's own person, and he throws anti-unionists in jail without trial as long as he wants. He also suspends some newspapers, like gets rid of them, and throws some of the editors into jail as well. Some things that you wouldn't really think of like this good guy Abraham Lincoln is doing, but he does them even though he technically can't do them. The Congress in the North also, while the South is out, they pass a bunch of laws that they haven't been able to pass because the South didn't want them. Hey, South's not here. They don't like it. Tough. When they come back, they got to follow these laws that we've passed. In the South, you have President Jefferson Davis. He's from Mississippi. And then you have Alexander Stevens as his vice president. Davis, the president of a confederacy, wants a strong central government, which is not a confederacy. Talked about how the states have more power than the national government in a confederacy. That means he also has trouble doing things like getting troops from one state to fight for another state, which is weird. There's times where he is super popular. Everybody likes him. There's times where they just want him to go away. This is one of those things where his pendulum and public opinion swings back and forth. And part of that's because he's reactionary. He doesn't really form public opinion. He reacts to public opinion. He works himself on the details, but not on the big picture of government. And people don't really know him. They don't know who the Confederate states are. They don't really know how long the Confederacy is going to last. They don't know if their money is going to be good or if they're even going to have any money. That's all for this episode. Tune in next time whenever we go over the military leadership and we start into some more battles of the Civil War.